on radio, on YouTube, streaming live on investtalk.com, and for our podcast subscribers, this is Invest Talk. Independent thinking, shared success. Invest Talk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. Here is KPP Financial Portfolio Manager, Luke Guerrero.
Good afternoon, fellow investors, and welcome back to Invest Talk. I'm your host, Luke Guerrero, and today's Friday, October 17th, 2025. And we are well on our way, deep into the fourth quarter of the year 2025. October is more than halfway done. And in some places in the U.S., it already feels more like winter. I know here in Los Angeles, we had a torrential downpour on Tuesday, snow in the mountains. And so it seems the holidays are right around the corner. And as we quickly move through the fourth quarter and closer to the end of the year, we cannot lose focus. With regard to the stock market, your portfolios, now is not the time to stop paying attention. And so we here at InvestTalk see our mission, our objective for this show is to each and every day help make you a better and more informed investor. We want to help you understand market dynamics and especially how those dynamics affect your lives. To that end, we have a mixture of educational and actionable material to go over today, but the most important part of this show comes directly through your finance and investment question contributions via voicemail, over on our YouTube, or live throughout the show. Now, in just a bit, we'll talk about today's market performance and run down those show topics, but let's tackle this caller question now.
Hey, I was just wondering about Neptune Company. They're an insurance company dealing with flood insurance, and government has kind of backed off of flood insurance. So I was just curious what your thoughts were investing in Neptune at this time. Thanks. Bye.
Neptune Insurance Holdings, ticker NP, is an insurance company primarily operating in the flood insurance space. So they offer residential and commercial flood and related risk insurance products through their subsidiaries. Now, it has had a bit of underwriting losses and its margins are not too hot, right? The company is currently operating at a net loss, which is pretty common in these early stage risk for insurance firms as they start to scale and refine their pricing model. There's also a bit of regulatory and climate risk headwinds. Right? There's growing awareness of climate-driven flooding, especially after some of these costly storms, and that's putting pressure on insurers and creating growth opportunities for those who are dedicated within the flood insurance space. But the company did complete its IPO recently. It is a bit of a niche insurer, and so I'm sure you heard about it because of the attractive nature of something in such a confined space. But it IPO'd in October 1st of 2025. It looks like it only has financial data, at least from my perspective, going back to 2023. And so I don't care what company this is. We've talked about this before. Historically speaking, if you look at the empirical data, in aggregate, companies tend to underperform in their first year of trading. There's many reasons, right? There's initial price discovery. There could be mispricing on what their IPO prices are. There's lockup periods that expire, so insiders start to sell shares. But either way, empirically, holding a company within the first year of its IPO is a negative proposition. And so, just like every other IPO, for Neptune Insurance Holdings, Inc., ticker NP, gonna pass. Thanks for the call. We got a lot to go over in the next 45 minutes or so, including my main focus point, which concerns this question. Should you panic? The real impact of a government shutdown on your investments. When we talk about this topic, we will break down the historical data from Fidelity to reveal how a government shutdown truly affects the stock market, fixed income, and the broader economy, and why your long-term strategy remains the best defense. Also, we have a couple more interesting topics to touch on. The first is the shutdown from a different angle, right? The shutdown is leaving the Fed and many other people in the dark on data, specifically as the Fed is weighing its next move. We'll also touch a bit on signs of liquidity strains, right? We do see banks starting to tap a Fed lending facility. We did see a bit of story surrounding a credit crunch, which led to a bit of a decline in the market this week, so we'll touch on that. Should we have time at the end of the show, we're going to talk about inflation-linked bonds, and are they really that safe? A common practice in a lot of people's accounts when they start to move into retirement, move into that consumption phase. So we'll touch on that. Should we have time at the end of the show? We also have some voicemail questions ready to play, including one on Sanofi, ticker SNY, and another on United Parcel Service, ticker UPS. As well as some questions that came in from the comment section of the Invest Talk YouTube channel. And of course, I welcome your finance and investment questions now or anytime throughout the show. We all know that you'll probably be making several important investment decisions here in the fourth quarter. But before you do so, I recommend that you look at our new comprehensive 2025 Q4 Economic and Market Outlook Report. It is a free read, and it's posted now at investtalk.com. As we move into a break, please remember that my phone lines are open. The number is 888-99-CHART.
The prosperous future you envision for yourself and your family will not happen without strategic planning and definitive action.
Let's go to Brian in San Mateo looking at Roku.
And I wanted your take on the technical picture.
For the unprepared investor, market volatility around the world demonstrates risk. But opportunities wait for no one. And now may be the best time in years to invest wisely, to invest strategically.
What I would do is keep saving and look for other opportunities.
But how can you decide what sectors to avoid, which stocks to buy, and what might be the best price point?
I'm new to investing, and my friend Wesley recommended your podcast a year ago.
The next decisive step on your path to financial freedom begins with a Spotify search for Invest Talk. Listen live or download the free podcast.
You know your business inside and out. Gusto knows payroll, compliance, and benefits as well, so you don't have to. Sounds like a match made in heaven, right? Gusto is online payroll and benefits software built for small businesses. It's all in one, remote friendly, and incredibly easy to use, so you can pay, hire, onboard, and support your team from anywhere. Gusto helps you save time with automated tools built right in, offer letters, onboarding materials, direct deposit, and more. Automatic payroll tax filing, simple direct deposits, health benefits, commuter benefits, workers' comp, 401k, you name it. Gusto makes it simple and has options for nearly every budget. Get direct access to certified HR experts to help support you through any tough HR situation. It's quick and simple to switch to Gusto. Just transfer your existing data to get up and running fast. Plus, don't pay a cent until you run your first payroll. Try Gusto today at gusto.com/investtalk and get 3 months free when you run your first payroll. That's 3 months of free payroll at gusto.com/investtalk. One more time, gusto.com/investtalk.
Millions of downloads have proved there's value in every Invest Talk podcast. Call anytime, 24/7. Invest Talk, 888-99-CHART.
Let's talk a little bit about the market today. U.S. stocks mostly higher overall, though ending a bit off of their best levels. The Dow is up 52 basis points, S&P 500 up 53, NASDAQ up 52, Russell 2000, finishing the opposite direction down 60. Diving into sectors, big tech mostly higher, Amazon though extending its recent underperformance. Other outperformers included credit cards, payment rails, China tech, tech hardware, airlines, and cruise lines. On the opposite side, underperformers included some GLP-1 names, copper and aluminum, custody banks, tech components, and machinery. Bonds, treasuries, a bit weaker. We did see some curve flattening today, reversing some of what we were seeing in pre-market strength heading into the trading day. At the same time, the dollar index was up 10 basis points, yet still off 60 basis points for the week. It's actually its worst weekly performance since early August. And gold finished down 2.1%, but in spite of that, still finished the week up 5.3%, continuing its march upward. Crude oil settled up about 30 basis points on the day, though off about 3% for the week for its third straight weekly decline. You know, trading overall was pretty choppy today. Seems investors were digesting a bit of yesterday's headlines about some of that rising credit stress at regional banks. Analysts noted issues appear to be contained for now, though news did come after a drumbeat of recent headlines about the ripple effects, right, of the First Brands and Tricolor bankruptcies, as well as Jamie Dimon from J.P. Morgan, CEO of J.P. Morgan, his comments this week that such events could be cockroaches signaling the potential for more. Other than that, though, really headlines were fairly quiet. Not much new on the U.S.-China trade front, though tensions do remain elevated, and the prospects of a Trump-Xi meeting at the coming APEC conference do remain a bit unclear. But at the same time, Trump did tell Fox Business that high bilateral tariffs, they're just not sustainable, and we're going to do fine, quote, we're going to do fine with China on a trade deal. On the funding side, still no clear path to a resolution for the U.S. government shutdown with the ongoing data vacuum. A bit of a risk. We'll talk a little bit about that later in the show and how that could be an issue, especially as the Fed is attempting to determine its next move into the end of the year. Nothing really on the economic calendar today, though sell-side analysts of state-level data pegged an initial claims at about 217,000 for the weekend October 11th, down from about 235 in the prior week. At the same time, Fed speak is still tapering off as well ahead of the blackout period ahead of next Wednesday's FOMC decision, which is widely expected to be another 25 basis point cut. But really not much else on the calendar next week. September CPI expected out next Friday, a shutdown exception due to Social Security statutory requirements. They will be looking at cost of living adjustments next year. Other major data likely limited to existing home sales on Thursday, along with the flash S&P Global PMIs and the final read of October's University of Michigan consumer sentiment on Friday. Now, from time to time, we also receive questions via our web forms from investtalk.com, so feel free. You got a question, just head over to our website and submit it directly to us. This one coming over from Peter D. The question's about Coloplast, ticker CLPBY. It says, Coloplast is currently trading near its 52-week low and has been identified as Morningstar's most undervalued biomedical stock. What are your thoughts on the investment opportunity? Well, Coloplast is a Danish med tech company. They focus on intimate healthcare, producing and marketing continence, wound care, interventional urology, and respiratory voice care products globally. In 2025, they introduced a new five-year strategy dubbed Impact 4 and updated its financial ambitions into 2030. There have been a bit of leadership and governance changes as well. The CEO will step down from the board at the next annual general meeting early in 2025. The CEO also resigned from that position. And so they're a bit of a leadership transition. Now, a couple ratings agencies look like have lowered their price target because margin outlooks are pretty poor. Net margin has been falling consistently since the pandemic. In September 2021, that number was 24%. Now it's projected to be 14.4%. Return on equity has fallen from 63.5% to 27.9% in that same time period. And sales growth has started to lag a bit, projected to grow from about $4 billion to $4.3 billion this upcoming year. It's been a perennial underperformer, that is, relative to its industry over the past 4 years. And year-to-date, it's down 16.2%, while still being a name that's trading at a price to forward-looking earnings of about 23%. And so, or 23 times, that is. And so for me, it's a bit of a niche medical play. Right, they have solid product moat because of how niche it is, but it's contending with a leadership transition, margin pressure. It's an ADR, so there's a bit of liquidity issues from time to time. The liquidity and volume has picked up towards the end of 2025. And so for a name that frankly hasn't been doing too well and from a momentum perspective looks pretty poor, you know, it's trading at its low, but is it trading at its 52-week low for a reason? I'll remind you that even though it's trading at its 52-week low, it is not at a low in terms of price to book. It is not at a low in terms of its forward-looking price to earnings or its price to sales or any of these things. So I'm not really seeing anything from a technical perspective that is pointing towards a momentum shift here, right? It's still a consensus hold rating. It still has some of those exogenous issues, or rather issues within itself, the transition, margin compression. And I'm not really seeing anything that is getting me exciting that they are on the way out of these troubles. I will say one benefit of them, I guess, is they have a strong dividend track record, a bit of a stability anchor for the company. But personally for me, that's not enough to throw that into my portfolio. That is CLPBY. Thanks for the call. Moving into a break, still to come, my main focus point and more answers to your questions. I encourage you to call now at InvestTalk. The number is 888-99-CHART. And Frank, we will get to you after this break.
InvestTalk Innovators. Justin Klein and Luke Guerrero interview company leaders, founders, and visionaries. So head over to the InvestTalk YouTube channel and look for InvestTalk Innovators. Luke Guerrero is here now and ready to answer your finance and investment questions. Call InvestTalk 888-99-CHART.
Let's go to Frank from New York, who has a question about Games Workshop Group. Do you own it, or are you looking to buy it?
I was just looking to research it. I just thought about hearing your opinion on it. I think I was watching a show. I forget what it was, but I saw some kids playing with it. Never knew what it was, but I got into it a little bit reading about it, and it seems there's a huge obsession with it, and the company's financials were insanely profitable. So I was wondering if you guys know anything about it. Is it worth researching into it?
Sure, let's take a look. So that name is Games Workshop Group. The ticker is GNWKF, which is a U.S.-listed over-the-counter ADR because it is a British company, and they specialize in miniature war games and fantasy tabletop products, notably Warhammer 40,000 and a couple other things that have a bit of a cult following in terms of their IP. So they design, they license, and they retail these miniature figures, these game systems, accessories, and the IP. Now, they have pretty strong profit growth, right? In the half year ended December of last year, Games Workshop reported a 33.4% increase in operating profit. Their revenue has grown at 18.5% on an annualized basis over the past 6 years. Net income has grown at 22.9%. Their EBITDA margin is sitting around 50% and their net margins at around 31.8%. The return on equity is 72.2%. Year to date, they're up about 17.33% in spite of being down 10% over the past 3 months. And so what they've done is, well, they're expanding their manufacturing footprint. They have a new factory in that is supposed to help them scale given the amount of demand that they're seeing. They've been increasing their dividend. Their valuation, it's not too crazy. I mean, 17 times forward-looking price, or 17 times price to book value is a little bit high for me, as is 8.1 times price to sales. But I mean, you're paying a premium for the crazy growth that they've seen, and it's relatively consistent growth. I mean, they grew from $661 million in revenue to $794 million in the previous year. That's pretty solid growth still. So it's not really backlog much. Now, overall, I mean, this seems to be a company that is benefiting from a great connection to its IP. And in this business, IP is really all that matters, right? You can build your game pieces, you can build your physical products, but at least Warhammer, I know, has been licensed to video games. Sometimes video games get licensed to movies. And so all these things can really help a business like this. At the same time, looks like it has a dividend, or it has been paying a consistent dividend over the past couple years. I would maybe take a deeper look at this name. I mean, I like its consistent growth. It's a bit expensive, but I certainly think if your question is, should you take a deeper look? The answer is yes. That is Games Workshop Group, ticker GMWKF. Thanks for the call, Frank. Alrighty, well, after weeks of gridlock, Congress has failed to pass a funding bill, and non-essential parts of the federal government, well, they're now closed. Essential services, such as Social Security, Medicare, air traffic control, and law enforcement, continue generally as they normally would, and historically, well, shutdowns aren't new. The U.S. has had 11 since 1981, lasting from a single day to as long as 34. Even the long ones, like in 2013 and 2018, caused pretty minimal market damage. The S&P 500 actually rose in the 100 days after both episodes. So the question naturally should be in your mind, how is this going to affect my life? How is this going to affect my portfolio? Well, Fidelity strategist Urian Timmer says investors should ignore short-term noise, as shutdowns tend to just create headlines, not really long-term portfolio risk. This year's setup looks pretty similar to 2018, a market pullback earlier in the year, followed by a rebound despite ongoing political drama. And it's not just contained to the equity side. On the fixed income side, markets tend to also just shrug it off. The Treasury keeps paying interest and running bond auctions, regardless of agency closures. So it's business as normal from the funding side of the government as well. The bigger concern isn't really default risk, but possible volatility if investors protest U.S. fiscal policy by dumping treasuries. It is true, right? A prolonged shutdown could, in effect, put a bit of a dent in growth, but really not enough for recession. More for slower momentum, more for a bit of erosion in confidence in the U.S. government and its policies. Credit rating agencies still are watching pretty closely. Moody's has already downgraded U.S. debt, and more cuts could lift borrowing costs. On the ground, most Americans won't feel immediate pain, though federal employees and contractors faced delayed paychecks. Fidelity's takeaway, and one that I tend to agree with, stick to your long-term plan. These political standoffs tend to pass, but diversified, goal-based portfolios are built to ride through them. On the next Invest Talk, we'll look into this story, how asset tokenization is revolutionizing global finance. Learn how leveraging blockchain to digitize and fractionalize assets is poised to make investing cheaper, faster, more transparent, and radically accessible to everyone. That's Monday. For now, I'm Lou Guerrero, and we are ready to take your calls now at 888-99-CHART.
Got a question for Justin or Luke? You're the best person to ask it.
I wanted to pick your brain about Apple. What did you think about their earnings call? Is this a good time to add to my position?
Call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Claude is the AI for minds that don't stop at good enough. It's the collaborator that actually understands your entire workflow and thinks with you, not for you. Let me tell you how we use Claude. We use Claude to build widgets on our website and to build a data dashboard using data from various information sources. Claude doesn't just give us answers. It helps us think through the problem. For example, Claude found connections across 50 plus sources that we never would have spotted ourselves. With Claude AI, you can connect to your work tools and data, create custom workflows, and benefit from extended thinking mode that maintains context and understanding throughout extensive conversations. Claude is for everyone: financial services, education, AI agents, and coders. Ready to tackle bigger problems? Sign up for Claude today and get 50% off Claude Pro when you use my link, claude.ai/invest. That's claude.ai/invest right now for 50% off your first 3 months of Claude Pro. That includes access to all the features mentioned in today's episode. claude.ai/invest.
Weekend is here, or almost here, but you've got finance and investment questions, so step up and call in. InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Hello, InvestTalk. I was trying to call you about the following ticker symbol, SNY. That's Sanofi. I'm probably saying that wrong.
I had the stock. I sold all of it and just reinvested it. I put it in copper and gold. Was that the right thing to do? I'll listen to the show. We appreciate your analysis and hope you have a good day. Thanks.
SanoFi, ticker SNY, is a global biopharmaceutical company that is headquartered in France that researches, develops, and manufactures and markets therapeutic solutions from immunology to rare diseases, oncology, and general medicine. Now, as with most biopharma companies, their success is going to be based upon their drugs, their therapies, and how successful they are. Now, recently they had a disappointing trial result from Amlitelimab, I can't pronounce this. And it was a late stage trial. It was a candidate for eczema related diseases. And it fell pretty short of investor expectations. That is one of the reasons why over the past 52 weeks, this name is down 7.73% and only up 4.96% year to date. Now, despite these pipeline setbacks, some of their core medicines, their vaccine division, they continue to generate pretty stable cash flow. But in this space, the name of the game is growth. And that's something you really haven't seen much of over the past 5 years. Annualized growth is about 1.9%. Net income has grown, though, at 12.6%. So margins have expanded quite a bit from about 30 or 8% in 2019, peaking out during the pandemic at 34.2%, then down to 20.5% this year. At the same time, they're sitting at a pretty reasonable valuation, 10 times forward-looking price to earnings. But your question is, you know, do you think that right now is a time that you should be invested in biopharmaceutical companies that are, again, predicated upon how successful these drug trials are? Or is it better to be in copper and gold? And so I think if the choice for me is between those two things, the clear choice is copper and gold because of the macro environment is more likely to help those types of companies, those types of commodities, than to help the biopharma space. That is SNY. Thanks for the call. Now, on Fridays, we generally make time to fit in a quick rundown of key benchmark numbers. So let me hit you with that list right now. The 2-year Treasury yield was sitting at 3.464% today. For perspective, 2 weeks ago, the number was 3.566. And 198 weeks ago, that number was 0.64. The 10-year Treasury yield was sitting at 4.011% today. 2 weeks ago, that number was 4.113. And 196 weeks ago, that number was 1.762. Gold is priced at $4,249 per ounce, a $365 increase compared with just 2 weeks ago. 11 weeks back, that number was 3,348. And 190 weeks ago, when we all wish we had gone all in on gold, that number was 1,806. Silver today, which has had quite a run, priced at $51.91 per ounce. That is $3.91 higher than just 2 weeks ago. 88 weeks back, that number was 2280. And looking back 182 weeks, silver was 2394. Oil was selling for $57.54 per barrel, a $3.51 decrease compared to just 2 weeks ago. 56 weeks back, that number was $67.79. And 98 weeks back, that number was $74.30. The national average for a gallon of regular gasoline is $3.05, a 10-cent decrease compared with 2 weeks ago. 124 weeks back, the number was 356. 172 weeks back, the number was 425. In California, it was averaging $4.64 per gallon, same as 2 weeks back. 102 weeks ago, that number was 532. 178 weeks ago, that number was 587. For comparison, in Kentucky, gas is averaging $2.67 per gallon today. That is $1.97 less per gallon than in California. Now, we already talked a little bit about the shutdown from the perspective of how it affects directly stock market returns. But I want to turn your focus to a different effect it has. Because the federal government shutdown is now disrupting the flow of key economic data, forcing the Federal Reserve to make its next rate decision partly blind. The September jobs report and multiple inflation releases have been delayed. They leave the Fed officials without their most reliable indicators. Ironically, the data vacuum really hurts the president's push for a deeper rate cut. Policymakers are lacking the evidence of labor market weakness that would justify it. With limited information, most economists see the Fed opting for a more conservative approach, just another quarter point rate cut, matching September's move, rather than moving in a direction that is even larger at a time when they really cannot see. Now, Chair Jerome Powell said that the absence of data could become a bit more of a challenge if the shutdown drags on, and that could add to the risk that the Fed is starting to miss its usual inputs. The Labor Department is recalling some staff to finish the CPI, now due October 24th, just before the next FOMC meeting. But in the meantime, officials are doing what they have in the past. They're turning to private sector data, ADP payrolls, Indeed job postings, credit card spending trackers, and attempting to use all of these things to fill the gaps. Now, policy divisions inside the Fed, well, they're widening. Some members worry about a softening job market. Others are focused more on stubborn inflation. The data blackout comes as the administration's tariffs and tighter immigration policies are starting to reshape the economy. They are raising costs for manufacturers and constraining the labor supply, and labor, you have to remember, is an input as well. Now, history offers a bit of precedent, right? Shutdowns in 96 and 2013 and 2018, they all delayed data releases. Though, it's important to note that none of them really derailed the Fed's ability to act. They often led to more of these minor moves rather than these drastic moves. But the risk is there. If the shutdown persists, officials may defer any larger policy shifts until December or potentially even beyond, when delayed reports can clarify how employment and inflation are trending. And so for investors, the message here is continuity. The Fed will likely trim modestly again, not pivot sharply, and keep cuts gradual until reliable data returns. Swing back to the InvestTalk voice bank. You know the number, 888-99-CHART.
Hey, Justin and Luke, Joe from South Carolina here. Just calling, wondering what you think of UPS, United Parcel Service. Stock's been going down for a while, but I see their business as one that has a high barrier to entry just because it's really just them and FedEx and USPS. Just wanted to see what you think of it. I think it could be a good value here and wanted to see if you agree. Look forward to listening for your answer on the podcast.
UPS, the United Parcel Service, is a leading global logistics and package delivery company. Now, they operate in the U.S., they operate internationally, and they also do a bit of not just residential delivery, but freight movement as well. Now, year-to-date, they're down about 31.48%, down 36% over the past 52 weeks, down dramatically since 2022. And so, you know, in Q1, they announced, okay, this is a time where we need to do some cost cutting, to restructure. They exceeded EPS estimates, but announced plans to lay off 20,000 employees, close 73 facilities to help to streamline operations, and also reducing its Amazon volume by about 50% by mid-2026. And that was a large portion of their package volume. Think of all the times you buy things on Amazon. They also acquired a healthcare logistics company out of Canada, deepening its healthcare supply chain. And in a way, they're facing some level of headwinds from trade, from tariffs, from classification issues. I know when I was ordering things from Canada or ordering things from Asia, it was a little uncertain what the cost to the importer, myself, was going to be. And so a lot of companies, the exporters from other countries, started to delay shipments. Now, they have a very high dividend yield, 7.6%. But as is often the case, that level of a dividend yield is more of a sign to worry about something, right? Dividends are not set in stone. Dividends can be cut. This is a reason to be concerned. UPS is in the midst of a transition. It's scaling back from its low margin customers, Amazon, restructuring its operations aggressively, and doubling down on its higher volume segments like its healthcare logistics. And so I'm really not seeing anything to show that the turnaround is going to be successful in the short to medium term. You have to remember, UPS and FedEx, it is a very difficult business. People don't understand how critical USPS is to UPS and FedEx. Putting logistics routes across the country, especially in areas with low population density, a lot of the package delivery from these companies is actually completed by the U.S. Postal Service. And so, you know, it's a name that we used to hold for our clients. We have since moved on. And I think even at these prices, the downside risk or the risk of it being flat for a while because of the lack of catalyst for growth outweighs the benefits. That is UPS, United Parcel Service. Now, I don't think we've gotten to a YouTube question yet today, so let's try and tackle one now. It's from Bisco Diskit. Interesting name. I like it. It says, I came across a utility that I hadn't heard of before. Ticker K-E-N. Let's pull this up over here. Kenen Holdings. It appears to be a little all over the place with assets in Israel and the United States, but then based in Singapore. Very strange, but limited fundamentals I can find seem attractive. Would you guys mind taking a look at this one on the show? Thank you. Of course. Let's take a look at Kenyon, K-E-N-O-N Holdings. Kenyon Holdings is a utility company. It's a holding company that operates its interests in energy through its power plants and natural gas segments and related infrastructure. It also has had stakes in the shipping and transportation business. About 83% of its revenue comes from its Israeli segment geographically. That makes up about 83% of its revenue as well. About 16.8% comes from the United States. Year to date, it's up 44% over the past 52 weeks, up 81%. Revenue growth pretty solid, from $373 million to $751 in about 5 or 6 years. It's about 15% growth on an annualized basis. At the same time, net income, though, is kind of all over the place. They've been negative. They've been slightly positive. Not a lot of consistency there. Now, they have had some pretty strong energy segment growth, some pretty strong project approvals. And they did declare a pretty large dividend in April of 2025. But I think one of the issues that I see is its energy exposure, especially in Israel, and some of the regulatory permitting policy geopolitical risks there could impact project timelines, costs. There's a bit of execution risk anytime you're scaling new plants, you're managing these capital expenditures, and trying to ensure returns on new builds. That is one of the reasons why the company's profitability is all over the darn place. In 2021, net margin was 190%. 2 years later, it was negative 34%. And so in this environment, I'm looking for stability. I'm looking for stable revenues, or rather stable growth in revenues. I'm looking for consistent returns. And because profitability tends to be all over the darn place here, I think I'm going to have to pass. That is ticker KEN, Kenyon Holdings. Thanks for the call. Now, I want to briefly mention the newest KPP premium newsletter, which will be distributed tomorrow. In the KPP Insights section, we discussed market liquidity. We will briefly touch, in our next talking point, on the market liquidity dynamics. But you have to understand that along with macro factors, market structure and liquidity have a big effect on our portfolio. So we'll have a bit of an update on that, as well as the stock ideas section, where we mentioned a German multinational medical technology company, as well as an American provider of climate control products. And in the portfolio management section, we talked about portfolio construction and the importance of non-correlated assets. If you're interested in learning more, visit us at investtalk.com and hit subscribe. The newsletter will come to your inbox on Saturday afternoon. Looks like we got plenty of time, so let's try and squeeze in another voicemail now.
Hey, good afternoon, InvestTalk. I had a question about Ramaco Resources, ticker METC. And I was just curious on your thoughts for this company moving forward, and I will be listening on the podcast for your answer. I appreciate everything that you guys do. Have a great night.
Ticker METC is Ramaco Resources, Inc. They engage in the operation and development of coal mining properties, so metallurgical coal in central and southern West Virginia, as well as plants in Pennsylvania. Now, recently, year to date, this stock is up 380%, up 361% in the past 52 weeks. Why? Well, they had a bit of discovery of rare earth elements in their Brook Mine, and that opened the potential upside beyond coal. It attracted a lot of speculative and thematic investor interest. Revenue has grown at about 23% on an annualized basis, but growth has really slowed from $693 million. It's actually falling into the end of this year to $583 million. At the same time, net margins projected to be negative this year. I see this name as a speculative play. I think the market sees it as a speculative play. It's trading at 35.4 times price to cash flow. And so, with a company that's as volatile as being down 7.48% today, unless you want to be in the speculative game, I think I would wait this out a little bit. That is Ramaco Resources, ticker MEGC. This is our final break. I'm Luke Guerrero, and I have one goal here, to help you achieve your financial freedom. Our work continues after our final break, so get your questions in now at 888-99-CHART.
Every investor is working to build a secure financial future. How they get there and when they get there, that depends on many variables. The more you learn about how the market works, the better your chances. So don't forget to call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Hi, Justin and Luke. This is Ben from Virginia. Today I would like to ask you about your opinion on HCC, that's Warrior Met Coal. I had bought a small position in this several months ago. I was just curious as to what your thoughts are on the space, on this particular stock, whether or not it's something that would be worth continuing to buy into a little bit here and there, or if we're waiting for a pullback, or if this recent dip is the pullback to wait on. Any of those, all of those, whatever your opinion on this might be. I'm just really curious. I'll be listening on the podcast. Thank you so much.
Ticker HCC is Warrior Met Coal. It's another U.S. metallurgical coal producer operating in the Appalachian region, particularly a bunch of underground mines in Alabama. And it sells premium coking coal for steel production. Now, year to date, it's up 20.28% over the past 3 months, up 23.84%. And really what's been affecting this is a couple things. Steel demand and coal pricing volatility, right? We've seen movements in global steel production, especially from China and India. And that's led to constraints or disruptions in the supply. And that's impacted met coal price swings. We're also seeing a bit of operational and cost pressures. You're seeing across the board rising input costs, labor, equipment, energy, and mining operation conditions, safety regulation. A lot of that can compress margins. Now, has this company really seen a bit of margin compression over the years? It has, right? It's gone from an EBITDA margin of 27 last year to 14.7. On a net margin basis, it actually is losing money this year. Net income sitting at negative $22 million. And, I mean, generally speaking, there's a bit of investor rotation. Industrials, miners, materials exposure often tend to see a bit of a shift depending on the commodity outlook. And so, understand that you have the potential to be in a relatively volatile play here. I mean, it's down 2% today. It's going to be highly predicated upon a lot of exogenous factors outside of the company related to steel demand, coal pricing, and generally the supply chain. So I think thematically there are other places you can be within this industry, but overall as a met coal company, I think HCC is a fine play. Thanks for the call. Now recently banks tapped the Federal Reserve's short-term lending facility for over $15 billion in just 2 days. That's the largest drawdown since the pandemic. That standing repo facility, or SRF, acts as like kind of a safety valve, right? It lets banks borrow cash from the Fed exchange for treasuries when market rates spike. Normally, the SRF just sits vital because, or rather idle, because banks can borrow cheaper elsewhere. But repo rates jumped above 4.25, and that forced banks to turn to the Fed. Now, the surge in usage signals that liquidity in the financial system, well, it's tightening, even though the Fed still holds about $3 trillion in bank reserves. Settlements of treasury bills and bonds added short-term strain, but analysts note such events haven't really triggered this kind of stress in recent years. The stress points more to QT, the Fed's balance sheet runoff, reaching its limits as excess reserves get depleted. Recall the Fed's balance sheet ballooned to $9 trillion during COVID from massive bond purchases. But QT since 2022 has reversed much of that flood of cash. The Fed has likely overdrained liquidity, and that could potentially be a problem into year end or even sooner. The repo surge is a loss of control of money markets and underscored some of the risks that policy tightening has gone a bit too far. Now, Chair Jerome Powell hinted Tuesday that QT could wind down in the coming months, saying the Fed wants banks to keep ample reserves. Powell's acknowledged gradually tightening liquidity conditions and noted a firming in repo rates, confirming the growing stress beneath the surface. And so, for investors, what's the takeaway? Well, this marks a key inflection point. If repo stress persists, the Fed may halt QT earlier than planned, signaling a potential pivot toward liquidity support heading in to the end of the year. I'm Lou Guerrero, and this completes another InvestTalk program. Justin and I thank you for listening and encourage you to tell your friends and family members about our free podcast downloads, as well as our YouTube channel where you get YouTube-exclusive content. You can get your podcasts anytime at iTunes and Spotify, and please be sure while you're over there to leave us a rate and review. And as always, if today's show made you think about your financial picture, your investments, your taxes, your retirement, and whether it's all really working together, we would love to talk. At KPP Financial, we offer no-cost portfolio reviews with the goal of helping to bring a little bit of clarity and confidence to your financial life. Just go to investtalk.com and click on the portfolio review button. We can't wait to speak with you. Independent thinking, shared success. This is InvestTalk. Enjoy your weekend.
InvestTalk is a trademark of KPP Financial. Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for the listener to understand that not all comments made will apply to them. Specifically, nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell security. Because such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor firm which retains all rights. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. Thank you for listening, and your comments and questions are welcome on our 24-hour listener line at 888-99-CHART.